king of every citizen. Tonight on the air, we hope that our Fred Allen Show, going on as usual, will provide our audience with helpful diversion. For civilian morale is important when the first task of every American is to help make America strong. To this task, we dedicate our manpower, our machines, our industry. In this respect, the Texas Company is proud to report that the strength of our vital oil industry is by far the greatest in the world. Even the Texas Company alone produces more petroleum than all of Europe, exclusive of Russia. Yes, all of us have our job to do in helping to make America strong. And every American pledges with heart, hand, and mind to make it stronger and stronger. Welcome to the Texaco Star Theater, ladies and gentlemen. We invite you to enjoy the next 60 minutes with Fred Allen, Kenny Baker, Portland Hopper, our special guest, Miss Luella Parsons, the winner of the Technical College Competition, Jack Wilson from the University of Oklahoma, and Al Zitman's Orchestra. An hour of mirth and melody brought to you by the more than 45,000 Texaco dealers from coast to coast. Ladies and gentlemen, for 4 days last week, New York was in a fog. We bring you now a man who has been in the fog for 40 years. He's Fred Allen, his first...
Thank you, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. And Jimmy, I was hoping that as we neared the Yule, we could start one show, this show tonight, without arguing. But, what is that, sorrow? But, have you got a funny line in your script that I haven't got? But since you have seen it fit to enter with a quip on your shoulder, I shall proceed to knock it off, being the boss.
But, Fred, you look as though you've been in the fog for 40 years.
And you look as though you have been in the rain for 40 years, Jimmy.
In the rain?
Yes, Mr. Wallington, you are the biggest drip I have ever seen. You are so wet. Now watch that muggy while I'm reading the line. And even when you turn around without doing anything, it's like you sit of that muggy. You are so wet, Mr. Wallington, if you ever lie down, the government will stock you with trout.
I was only kidding. You don't have to get sore about it.
Well, why shouldn't I get sore, Jimmy? You pulled that gag about the fog. Now you ruined my whole newsreel. A newsreel. I've got four people here tonight to talk about fog. I'm sorry, folks. I won't be able to use you folks tonight. Some other time, possibly. I'll keep you in mind.
Well, good night, Mr. Allen.
Good night, Mr. Allen.
Thank you.
No, you don't. I came all the way from nothing to Jersey to tell my story.
Well, I realize that. I know. You are Mr. Fulcrum T. Biddle. I have your name on my cuff here when we signed you in Nutley last week. You are the hunter who had trouble in the fog. Is
yes,
that right?
Yes. I am an old boy scout. My wife is a campfire girl.
Huh? You met in the woods, did you?
Yes. My wife was tracking a skunk. She overtook me with love at first sight.
That I can understand.
Every year on our wedding anniversary, I go out into the woods and shoot a deer for my wife.
You do?
Yes.
Shoot a deer,
yes.
Huh? Well, did you start out this year?
Oh, yes. I had my high boots, my gun, my compass, and my deer call.
That is your deer call?
Yes.
Well, where did you start from, Mr. Biddle?
My backyard in Nutley.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
Well, was the fog bad?
Oh, it was terrible. I bounded into the woods. I couldn't see a thing. I blew my deer call.
What happened?
Well, sir, there was no answer. The fog kept getting worse.
Yes?
I got down on all fours and started crawling.
You were crawling through the fog on your hands and knees?
Yes, sir. Finally, I found some deer tracks.
You found some deer tracks?
Yes, sir. I followed the deer tracks to an old cave. I looked in.
And there you found...
four little boys on pogo sticks.
Well, what did you do, Mr.
Biddle? I blew my deer call. I was off again. For 4 hours, I kept crawling on my hands and knees in that fog, blowing my gear cord for dear life.
That sounds more like an opinion than a gear cord. As an old moose man myself. But tell me, you're crawling on your hands and knees, blowing your call intermittently. You didn't give up.
I was just about to, when suddenly,
yes,
out of the fog, I saw...
You saw?
A pair of antlers.
Antlers?
Yes, sir. I raised my gun and fired.
Yes?
The fog lifted. There I was on my hands and knees.
Where?
In front of the A&P store and nothing. I was humiliated.
Well, you did bag a deer, Mr. Biddle.
It turned out to be a man carrying a hawthorn.
Yes. So you didn't get your deal after all?
No, I got a summons. The man is suing.
The man is suing? What, what did you say to the man? I get it, and thank you for your labial contribution, Mr. Fulcrum Biddle. Well, now we guess we can get on with the show now.
Not quite yet, old boy.
Oh, staff, open show. Well, not tonight. We don't want any.
But I have written a fresh batch of poems.
We are not interested.
Have you heard, "Goodbye, sweet Flossie, here comes the party"?
No.
Or, "She listened to me prattle as we sat among the cattle"? "That's not a piece of burlap, Brakeman. You're yanking my mother's shawl."
Now, wait, Falstaff. Tonight, we are where we're supposed to discuss the recent foggy spell.
Precisely why I am here.
You?
I have written a poem about it.
And what is your fog poem called?
An epilogue to fog.
An epilogue to fog. Well, how does it go?
"Poets for eons facing starvation have turned to the weather for inspiration. They have written odes to the sleet and snow, to the rain and the frost, and the wine moaning low."
The wine.
"But I am a poet, a renegade. A song of fog is my serenade. When I sing a fog, I'm all agog, like a hog in a bog or a frog on a log. Like a polly with its wog or a nick in its nog. Yea, the muse I flog to sing a fog.
Well, thank
the
you.
The reason friend. I chant a fog, I run a lighthouse up in Maine. Fog is what makes my living for me. Where would I be but for F.O.G.?
Well, thank you.
If there was no fog on that lonely reef, my lighthouse would close and I'd be back on relief."
Well, thank you very much. From the ridiculous, we turn to the sublime and welcome Kenny Baker, loyally supported by Al Goodman and his orchestra. Kenny sings El Rancho Grande.
Thank you.
Yes, Bert?
I meant to ask you before, how come you've lost that frosted, that chapped look you used to have?
What chapped look?
Well, you know, Jimmy, now you're from California, and I remember distinctly that last winter, when our cold weather set in, you were carrying a portable smudge pot around the city here.
Oh, well, this year I'm a James Bear.
But I notice now that you seem to enjoy cold days. How do you do it? You make yourself mad and get hot under the collar and pray that it will go lower down?
No, it's very simple, Fred. I enjoy cold weather now because I got myself in a good physical condition.
Oh, you lost that blue look by getting in the pink.
Uh-huh.
Color matter, color, I see.
And let me point out that getting into good condition for winter is not only wise for you and me, but for our cars. Ladies and gentlemen, if you want to enjoy driving your car despite cold days, don't delay seeing your technical dealer for complete winter conditioning. That means having the old worn oil changed so that you'll get quick battery and gasoline-saving starts in any weather. It means seeing that the right grade of quality lubricant is in the transmission for easier shifting of gears on coldest days. And going further, it includes a change over to winter lubricants at all vital points in the chassis for smoother, easier riding. So drive in at your technical dealer and drive out with an easier handling car. And a safer car, too. He's trained to do skilled, thorough work. And he uses these quality technical products. Havoline, his premium motor oil, or insulated technical motor oil, technical transmission lubricant, and Marvac for the chassis. Do it tomorrow.
Gentlemen, may I present our guest, the lady who probably knows more about Hollywood than the Hollywood Chamber of Commerce. She is Miss...
Mr. Allen!
Well, pardon me. Well, what's with you?
I don't have time to tell any jokes tonight.
No fun tonight, huh? Why not?
Teddy and I are going to surprise our guest.
Surprise our guest? You know who our guest tonight is. It's Miss Luella Parsons, the famous Hollywood columnist.
Well, you see the big Hollywood reception Penny has picked up for Miss Parsons. Hey, Penny?
Yeah, you bet, Effie. Why, you can't sneak around. Miss Parsons is from Hollywood.
Well, no, but how can we give her a big reception with three of us?
Mr. Goodman bought a special fanfare.
A fanfare?
Mm-hmm. It cost $15. He got it wholesale.
To a friend. He knows a man with fanfare. Well, what kind of a
fanfare?
What kind of a fanfare is it?
Well, Mr. Goodman, will you play Miss Parsons' fanfare, the $15 one?
$15 wholesale, huh? What was that little thing on the end?
That was the sales tag.
Here's your speech, F.A.
What speech? What do I want with this speech?
Well, you're supposed to be the MC in the lobby.
Oh, an MC, but at a Hollywood premiere, Kenny, the MC brings movie stars to the microphone.
That's all fixed.
Yes. Morty and I will imitate the stars alive.
You just you two will imitate her. This is going to sound like Grauman's Pekingese. It's going to the door, Doug.
Yeah, you know, I put a box of wet cement right in front of the stage door.
Wet cement for what?
Teddy's going to get his Parsons footprint.
Well, he may get it where he's not expecting it. Miss Parsons, I hear, is quite limber. And if he has cement... If he has cement on her foot, Kenny will think he is backed into a cornerstone.
Okay, let's go with the broadcast, F.A.
All right, some tells me I shouldn't, but all right.
Look, make like a crowd for it, you know.
All right.
All right. Good evening, movie fans. Here we are in the lobby of the Texaco Star Theater about to preview Miss Luella Parsons. All the Hollywood stars are here tonight. There goes a friend of Slim Somerville's. There goes one of Dr. Kildare's patients. Yes, the stars are out tonight. And here to our microphone comes Miss Netta Darbo. Darbo, are you here to welcome Luella Parsons?
Yes. I always listen to Fred Allen's program.
Well, thank you.
I want to be alone.
Overdo it for them. You get a little chance like that. You think somebody's listening in California, you overdo it. And now, look who's here, ladies and gentlemen. Look who's here, Nelson Eddy. How do you do, Nelson Neddy?
How do you do?
You are going in to cheer Miss Parsons?
No, I'm here to get singing lessons from Kenny Baker.
You have Nelson Eddy.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
And here is another well-known star, one we all love. Your name escapes me, sir.
Maybe this will help you.
Why, of course, you're Johnny Weissmuller, aren't you?
No, I'm John Barrymore's doctor.
He hasn't paid you yet, I get it. Well, still, the stars flock by, and here comes the star of the evening, the first lady of the Hollywood column. You farted too soon. I really ought to read the whole thing over and make you do it. Well, good evening, Luella, if I'm not too familiar.
Not at all, Fred. And thank you for this gallery set.
Oh, well, we just tried to give you the old Hollywood rinky-dink, Luella. How did it sound?
Well, John, it's grand. You know, I thought for a moment I was Abbott and Costello. You had everything but the spotlight.
Yes, we wanted a spotlight. We thought we could make Mr. Goodman's ball spot do. But his skin went dim at the last minute. And while we're waiting for Mr. Goodman to glow, you and I can tangle.
What's on your mind, Fred?
Well, Luella, you know all the gossip about Hollywood. You spent years making other people famous. How about coming out from behind your typewriter tonight and giving us the lowdown on you?
Well, Fred, there really isn't any lowdown. People all over the world are interested in Hollywood. I just try to print the news as I see and hear.
Well, how many newspapers carry your daily column?
Well, I should say about 300, including 5 in South America.
5 in South America. If Mrs. Zanuck hears that, he'll have Don Amici playing the life of Carmen Miranda. Now, Kenny, you go away. Kenny, go away. Well, tell me, excuse me, Luella, but tell me, how do you manage to get the news of the industry and the stars first? You have little men who hide in producers' offices disguised as bookends?
Not at all, Fred. I get the news right from the stars themselves. Only yesterday, Mickey Rooney telephoned to me from Hollywood to tell me of his engagement to Ava Gardner. And a little later, Constance Bennett wired me that the stork had brought her a 6.5-pound baby girl.
You didn't hear from the stork personally,
no,
did you?
No, just about the moment.
Well, why... why did the stars call you up, Luella?
When did she Fred, many of the boys and girls came to me for advice before they were stars.
And after they became famous?
Well, many of them still ask my advice about their marriages, quarrels, contracts, the horses they own, and about everything else.
Well, do they take the advice you give them?
But never.
That's the way it is with advice. A lot of people can't take it. Well, now, how did you first get involved in the picture business?
Well, you see, I started as a writer in the old S&A Studios in Chicago.
The old S&A Studios. You better be careful, Luella. You'll give away your age.
You know, I don't try to hide my age anymore. After all, when a girl gets to be 30...
I know. When a girl gets to be 30, she stays there. But when did you start writing movie gossip?
On the old Chicago Record Herald. I started writing picture news for fun.
And your daily report became the world's first syndicated movie column.
That's right.
Hey, Fred, ask her about my name.
In a minute. I'll answer in a minute. Now, about Hollywood. Which came first, Luella? You or Hollywood?
Well, I'm Hollywood first.
Wait for our laugh. The doc won't like it if you talk on our laugh.
No.
Which came first, you or Hollywood?
Well, I guess Hollywood came first. But in those days, it was just a small town. And the stars were all our neighbors.
I know. Those must have been glamorous days.
Indeed, they were. You know, Fred, I remember when John Barrymore married Michael Strange. What a wedding.
Oh, I read about that in the Encyclopedia Britannica. Little May Robeson was the flower. Now, tell me, was the Cecil B. DeMille with the beret askew loose in Hollywood at that time?
Ten Commandments and the King of Kings.
Mr. DeMille was the father of Epic Productions.
Yes. You know, in those days, he used horses by the hundreds and extras by the thousands.
Well, it's a lot different today. I hear that in his next picture, the Lone Ranger is going to be a pedestrian. Yes, to the OPM has stepped in and taken his silver, I understand.
Say, Fred, if Miss Parsons is going to use my name, why, Kenny is spelled with a small K. And there's one B.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Don't do that again. You see, Miss Parsons, he cannot resist you. You've upset Kenny. Go ahead, Kenny.
Well, look, Miss Parsons, my first name is spelled with a small K, and the last name, Baker, is spelled with a small B.
Yes. And you'd like to be in a picture.
What a sound 48 got that I haven't got. And where can I get it in 60 lessons?
Now, look, Kenny, you haven't the profile to be a movie actor.
Profile, he says. Look who's talking. Why, you look like Santa Claus came down your nose and left a bag under his arm.
Kenny, you irk me with a capital J. Well, I know you are always talking news. How would you like to walk out of here tonight with a scoop?
Why, I'd love to, Fred.
Well, now, confidentially, do you know an old character actor out in Hollywood named Benny?
Of course. But you can't tell me anything about Jack Benny, Fred.
I can't tell you anything about Jack Benny, eh? Where was he born?
Why, in Waukegan. Everybody knows that.
So he hoodwinked you, too, huh? How would you like to know that Benny was born in Chicago?
In Chicago?
After the Chicago fire, Benny's family fled to Waukegan on a hook and ladder.
Now, Fred, you know very well Jack isn't that old.
He isn't that old. Benny started the Chicago fire.
I don't believe it.
Why, when Benny was a little baby, Luella, he was too cheap to buy milk. He used to crawl into Mrs. O'Leary's barn and have lactic traffic with her cow. One cold night, Benny wanted some warm milk. He built a fire under the cow. Excelsior.
I think you're prejudiced, Fred. Everybody out in Hollywood is crazy about Jack Benny. He's just a fun-loving boy.
Say, do you know a girl out there who calls herself Mary Livingston?
Of course I do. Mary is Jack's wife.
Wife? Mary Livingston is Jack Benny's daughter.
Fred Allen, how can you say a thing like that?
I have the proof, Luella. Years ago, Benny was married to a little seamstress in Philadelphia. Her name was Betsy Ross. There is your scoop, Luella Parsons, and good luck to you.
Well, I can't think that, because I love that man.
Well, then you are his public, Luella. Say, tell me, have many changes been made in Hollywood during recent years?
A great many, sir. In spite of sweater girls, oomph girls, and so forth, Hollywood in general is glamorizing itself.
It's coming down to work.
Exactly. The old days of dark glasses, mammoth swimming pools, and general exhibitionism are gone.
Good.
Another thing I like is that during the past year, there have been fewer divorces and more babies in Hollywood than in any year I can remember.
Well, of course, Luella, now that the stars have taken off their dark glasses, the stork can finally see to whom to deliver. Well, having you with us tonight, Luella. Is there anything that we've overlooked, I mean, as far as your work is concerned?
No, Fred. I think we've covered my career pretty well.
Well, after writing about Hollywood and the stars for 25 years, I guess you have covered about every big story out there.
No, Fred. Some of my biggest stories I've never printed.
Well, why not, Luella?
Well, getting scoops and inside news may be saying to a Hollywood columnist, but no story is important enough to break another person's heart. That's all today. See you tomorrow.
Thank you, and good night, Miss Luella Parsons.
Kenny Baker. Kenny Baker.
Baker is Hollywood Hope blasted, find solace in song. Kenny Baker singing The Angels Sing Through.
Well, you know, back in 1920, Jack, if you lived in any small town in Oklahoma and saw a small, mangy pony, four scurvy dogs, and me get off the train, That was the vaudeville show for that week.
Well, I'm afraid that was a little before my time.
Well, fortunately for you, Jack, that dog act was nothing to brag about. You know, Oklahoma and New York have a lot in common, don't you think?
Well, I don't know. You know, an Oklahoma cowboy would sure get a laugh out of the horses you have here in New York.
The horses? How do you mean, Jack?
Well, I saw a horse today with a braided tail and fancy rubber shoes on.
Oh, Betsy, yes. The horse... Yes, our city horses are a little effeminate, Jack. You know, if a man gets on a New York horse and doesn't sit side saddle, the horse looks around. He knows it's a tourist aboard. But enough of this equine small talk. Tell me, Jack, what are you studying down there at school?
Law. I'm a senior law student.
Law student? Well, that's peculiar, Jack. Five of the eight college boys who have been on our program this season have been law students. You know, if we keep getting lawyers, people won't know this program from the Goodwill Court. Is your father a lawyer too, Jack?
No, sir. My dad's a salesman. He sells aluminum cooking utensils.
Well, how can your dad sell aluminum when the government has a priority?
Well, that's what he keeps telling them down at the office.
Your dad has a sideline. He's a Bob Hope fan. Very clutch sideline, too, I might add. But tell me, Jack, are you a fraternity man?
Yes, sir. I'm a Beta Theta Pi, and I'm also a member of the Phi Delta Phi, the legal fraternity.
You're living on the fat of the land, in other words. The farmers at the school I attended years ago had an agricultural fraternity. It was called the Alpha Smalpha Alfalfa.
I've never heard of the Alpha Smalpha Alfalfa.
Oh, well, it was just a corny outfit. Our fraternity tin was a spot of succotash worn low on the vest. Changing the subject, have you done any Christmas shopping while you've been in New York? Have you bought any presents?
No, the only present I have is one for you, Miss Allen.
Oh, a present for little old underdone mentally, I, Jack.
Yes, this is Mr. Joseph A. France, the president of Oklahoma University, has asked me to present you with this Indian headdress.
Well, that's very nice of Mr. Use a feather in my cap. Are you going to swear me in, Jack?
Yes, sir. In the name of the American Indian Exposition and the Comanche Tribe, and I'm about to Oklahoma, I hereby appoint you, Fred Allen, a Comanche chief.
Today I am a Comanche. Well, now that I'm a chief, Jack, I think I'll celebrate with some entertainment. My spies tell me that you sing and play the piano.
That's right.
And what are you going to sing and play for us tonight?
Well, Miss Ellen, I'd like to play and sing the Louisiana Lullaby.
Right ahead.
Thank you.
Join us here tonight. Now, next week, ladies and gentlemen, the most talented undergraduate of the University of Missouri. After listening to the three finalists over station KMDC in Kansas City, the Missouri students conducted their own election. Ballots have just been tabulated, and the winner is Hamer Flea. Well, we'll be looking for you next Wednesday, Hamer. And now, I guess, Jimmy, while we're waiting for Hamer to get here, I think it's your turn.
Thank you, Fred. Fire engines don't have starting trouble in cold weather, ladies and gentlemen. Their engines...
Put a little more excitement in there.
Did you say something, Fred?
Well, I guess just put a little more expression into it, if
you know. Oh, you're starting that again.
Now, I'm not starting anything, Jimmy. I'm only suggesting.
Now, look, I told you last week. I've been reading commercials for years.
Well, I know that, but none of it is perfect, Jimmy.
Well, I'm the exception, Mr. Allen. When I finish reading this commercial, it will be red.
Well, I realize that, but while you're reading it, Jimmy, I just ask you to give us a little more expression, that's all.
For your information, Mr. Allen, nobody can read this commercial any better than I'm reading it.
Look, Jimmy, I don't want to argue, but I will bet you $5 that any person sitting here in our audience tonight can do a better job than you're doing now. Anybody in the place here.
You'll bet me $5.
I'll bet you $5. I'll take any stranger out of the audience.
And the party will read this commercial.
Better than you.
It's a bet.
All right, I'll go down in the audience and kick out anyone. Now, who'd like to come up and read this? Anybody like to come up and read it?
Oh, come right up.
It's all right, sir. I've only got so many steps in my legs, I'd like to save them if I could.
Now we're going to find out.
Yes, we're going to find out. Thanks a lot, Bert, for coming up. So may I ask your name?
Charles Wilde.
Charles Wilde? You live in New York?
I do.
New York City?
Yes, sir.
And what is your occupation, Charles?
I am unemployed at the present.
You are? Well, you're working right now. The way it looks, you may be here from now on, I hope. There is the commercial. You go ahead and read it.
Fire engines don't have starting trouble in cold weather. Their engines roar into action at the drop of a hat and warm up fast. They must have quick power and full power. It was to meet these reserve requirements that Texaco first developed fire-proof gasoline.
That's good. You gave us two words. He gave us one word.
It's called the emergency duty gasoline because it was designed for fire engines, ambulances, and other vehicles in special service. Texaco Fire Chief comes to you loaded with power. It's ready to go at the push of the starter. It brings you quickly up to cruising speed. It delivers good long mileage too for every gallon. So next time, try a Texaco dealer and Fire Chief. Emergency duty gasoline at regular gasoline price.
All right, Jimmy, you owe me $5. Charles, get it much better.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Starting next week, ladies and gentlemen, the announcer on this program will be Mr. Charles Wilde. Death Valley Days. This version tonight is called Death Valley Takes a Holiday.
or he died with his boots off, and the Indian saw three heels. Music, Sheriff.
Now, I can't die with my boots down. Bah! If you lose the draw, Luke, you can borrow boots from one of us. You can die with our boots on.
That's an idea. That's foreign squaw, ain't it, Luke?
If you really foreign squaw, Fleabag, what size boots do you wear?
Mine's 5'9".
See, what's yours, Wild Bill?
My boots are 10½.
Long John?
My right one's size 11. The other one's a 12. My left big toe is king size.
We got 9, 10½, 111, and 112.
Now, ain't that just smaller? My boots is size 18, triple A. Get on with the drawing, then.
Now, hold on, Luke. You ain't getting out of this.
Well, take me, Wild Bill. It's 30 just. If there ain't no boots to fit me, how can I die with my boots off?
I got 90, and it's far and far.
What far and far?
Before we draw lots to see who goes for Errol Flynn,
yeah,
we'll draw lots to see who goes for Luke's boots.
That's far and far.
I'll let you join us in the first draw, Luke.
Well, okay, man, I'll draw.
Get the clips way back.
Got them ready right here in my hat. Man, we'll draw the sort of clip goes for Luke's boots.
That's far and far.
Okay, draw, man.
I got mine.
Hold up the hat.
Now, hold out the clip, man. Who's got the shortest?
Jumping hits me. Way back.
You go for Luke's boots, way back.
Jeeper.
Good luck, way back.
Okay. And if they get me, tell them back home I died with my boots on.
Open the door.
Goodbye, man.
Oh. Well, he died with his boots on.
Playback, couldn't have given him the slip.
Speaking of slips, remind me, Luke.
Yeah, Wild Bill.
When we held out them slips after the draw, I noticed you had two slips. One was behind your back.
Well, must have been a hangnail. I got wide hangnails.
Well, come on, man. Let's draw again. We got to get Luke's boots.
Hold on now. This time we ain't a drawing slip.
We?
There's only three of us and this loaf of raisin bread left.
How can you draw with bread?
I'm cutting three slices of raisin bread. Will each take a slice? Low man with raisins and his slice goes to Luke Blue. Now, I'll cut. Take your slice, Long John.
Okay.
Luke.
Okay.
This is mine. All your raisins. I got 6.
I got 5.
I got 4.
Looks like it's you, Long John.
Good luck, Long John. Okay. And if they get me, tell them back home. I'll die with my boots on. Open the door. Goodbye. No.
We'll be done.
Must have been that same redskin that got way back.
Yeah, it's the Daily Devil today, didn't it?
Well, Long John's eyes sure was bad.
Sure was. His eyes were so bad, reckon he never seen that bullet come in.
Long John never seen the two of them raisins in your bread with horse flies, neither.
You ain't incinerating, Wild Bill.
You was low bred, Luke Allen, and you knows it.
I want no lower bred than you was.
Well, take no use in ruckusing, Luke. What us do is got to go for your boots.
We'll hand you the knife. I'll slice this raisin bread again.
Not this time, Luke. We'll roll dice.
Well, okay, suits me. I got my dice right here in my pole.
We ain't using your dice, Luke Allen.
Why not, Wild Bill?
And dice of yourn are so loaded it takes two men to roll them. We'll roll my dice.
Well, suits me.
First man to roll a 7 stays.
Suits me.
The other man goes for your boots. I'll roll first.
Six.
Your roll, Luke.
Mind if I roll them one at a time? I got a small hand.
Not as long as it's far and squall.
It'll be far and squall. Now, here's my first roll.
5. You got a roll of 2 to win.
Come on, Dice. I'm requesting a 2.
Well, I'll be back, man. The 2 it is.
Now, 2 and 5 make 7.
Well, good luck, Wild Bill.
Okay. And if when they get me, tell them back home I died with my boots on. Open the door. Hello, Luke.
Well, he died with his boots on. And that, Mr. Brown, is how I became the sole survivor of Custer's last stand.
Yeah, old scout, that Indian got Wild Bill, too.
Yeah, Mr. Brown, sorry I was alone.
What did you do?
The first thing I did is put my elk shoes back on.
Elk shoes?
Yeah, you see, when I rolled out that 5, I needed 2 to make a 7. Well, my elk shoes had 2 cavities. I hit the dice, I rolled out my elk shoe, I made my 7.
Well, what happened when you were left alone, old scout?
Well, before trying to escape, I wanted to see if that Indian had any ammunition left. I opened the door. He did have. I knew then there was no chance of getting word through to Errol Flynn.
You were troubled.
I thought I was buzzer bait, sure enough, Mr. Brown. But thinking of Errol Flynn, give me an idea.
Yes?
I opened the door. I called to the Indian. Hey, chief! The Indian comes to the door with his feathers and attention. The Indian says,
oh.
I says, you know Errol Flynn?
Oh.
I plead with Errol Flynn in Santa Fe.
Oh, you play with Errol Flynn in Dodge City.
Brother. Well, with that, we were friends, Mr. Brown.
You and the Indian were brothers.
We was brothers under the Flynn. That's how it comes, Mr. Brown. The old scout is still here alive tonight.
And if you don't get any applause when you finish this story, old scout,
you can tell the sponsor, I died with the boots on.
That about winds everything up, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us tonight. Next week, our guest will be Ned Fox, the famous Hollywood star, and the winner of the Texaco College competition at the University of Missouri, Tamer Fleet. This is Fred Allen saying good night for the more than 45,000 Texaco dealers from coast to coast, inviting you to tune in again next Wednesday night and to drive in at your Texaco dealers at any time. Remember, you're welcome. Good night.
For further developments on the war situation, we take you to the CBS newsroom. This is John Daly reporting from the CBS newsroom in New York, and here are the latest developments in the war with Japan. First, a bulletin has just come in, datelined Manila. An army communique today said that army bombers had scored 3 direct hits on a Japanese battleship of the Hiranuma class, the 29,000-ton class, at a point 10 miles northeast of northern Luzon. A fire was started on the ship, says the bulletin. 2 bombs dropped close alongside the ship. The battleship was said to be blazing fiercely when the bomber left the scene. It's now about 2 o'clock on Thursday afternoon in Manila. Japanese forces still appear to be turning at many points in the eastern Pacific, but there have been no important developments in the last few hours. The principal attack seems to be going forward on the Philippine island of Luzon. According to the latest War Department communique out of Washington, Japanese landings on the west coast of Luzon have been repulsed. And enemy losses apparently have been large. But Washington admitted that the Japs have gained a foothold on the northern coast, probably between Bigan and Apari. There is almost no news from other American positions in the Pacific area. The Army Command in Honolulu reports that Hawaii has suffered no enemy attacks at all since Sunday, and the islands are described officially as quiet. All citizens, among them several thousand Japanese, are said to be cooperating with the authorities. Hawaii is now under martial law. As for operations in other areas, Japanese troops have captured the British airdrome at Kota Bharu in the northern sector of British Malaya near the Thai border. South of Kota Bharu, British forces are putting up vigorous resistance. And Singapore, Britain's naval base in southeastern Malaya, is being reinforced by naval and air units from the Dutch East Indies and India. About an hour ago, Columbia's shortwave listening station here in New York heard the British radio say that the Dutch fleet has left Batavian waters. Quoting Singapore dispatches, BBC also says that 270 American and British subjects have already been interned in Japan. From Singapore Direct comes word that an undisclosed number of survivors have been landed at the British naval base from the British warship Prince of Wales and Repulse, which the Japanese sank yesterday. The Associated Press reports that Columbia correspondent Cecil Brown is among those rescued from the Repulse, and so is O'Dowd Gallagher, correspondent of the London Daily Express. Both Brown and Gallagher were previously reported on board the Prince of Wales. So far, there is no news of Admiral Sir Tom Phillips, commander of Britain's Far Eastern Fleet. Regarding operations farther north, the British say they have stabilized their positions at the Crown Colony of Hong Kong and repulsed 2 Japanese attacks. Chinese forces are advancing against the Japanese in the Canton area, which is a few miles north and west of Hong Kong. On our own west coast, California is now blacked out from the Mexican border north to a point west of Boulder Dam in Nevada. And the Fourth Interceptor Command says this is not a practice blackout. Here is a report just in about that area. The Army announced tonight that unidentified planes were over and south of Los Angeles, and that the planes of the Fourth Interceptor Command had been sent aloft to determine if they were enemy aircraft. A few hours ago, all radio stations in the Los Angeles area were shut down under orders from the Army. In Mexico, a large-scale move to reinforce Mexico's Pacific Coast defense is underway. All Mexican troops, planes, and gunboats that can be spared are at this moment moving westward, and it was announced in Mexico City that General Lázaro Cárdenas, the former president, has been named the commander-in-chief of all Mexican armed forces on Mexico's Pacific shoreline. And that is the latest news on the Far East. The next special news broadcast will be heard over many of these stations at 1:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Columbia, which is keeping its network open all night, will continue to interrupt its regularly scheduled programs to bring you the latest news. John Daly speaking. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.